Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 76 for February 5th, 2008. Google Whack. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, our weekly travel down the river, the wide river that is the Mac cult. With us right now, our guides from all the way from Boston, Massachusetts, Andy Iannocco.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
Does it feel like the sky is crying to you? It really feels as though the sky is crying to me.
Is it raining in Boston?
Oh, it's raining in our hearts.
Has something to do with a football game, probably.
Oh, right. A little Patriot.
No, it has to do with the fact that me and just about everybody in my peer group seems to have not seen the last 20 minutes of this Sunday's episode of House because Fox kept screwing with us on when the start and end time was going to be. Now, we're not pleased that we lost the Super Bowl, but we need to know what happened to that woman at the Arctic Research Station.
Yes, they were promoting it like crazy.
Oh my God, it was hilarious. It was ridiculous how they were promoting it.
Yeah. So, Andy, I'm sorry, our commiseration. Were there any Giants fans in the group here? No.
Good, we killed them all. Awesome.
They're gone. I have to say, I was rooting for the Pets, but that was such a dramatic game. I mean, it's the best Super Bowl in years.
Yeah. It was an awesome game, yes.
And any... Say again?
About the best last 2 minutes I've ever seen.
It was very exciting. Well, it reminded me of those Joe Montana 2 minute drills for the Niners many years ago. Not quite as clockwork, but still very exciting. And when he broke that tackle,
that was it.
Oh man, that was great.
And then caught the ball on his head.
Yeah, that was a wild catch. Anyway, this isn't Giants today. There are many football podcasts. We invite you to listen to those, but not this.
This Week in Super Bowl.
Scott Bourne is here from Podango and phonecrazygirlsgonewildshow.com.
Not exactly, but thank you.
Girlsgonegeek.tv and applephoneshow.com.
Thank you, sir.
And Mr. Merlin Mann from 43folders.com. Hey, Merlin.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I was watching Andy. I'm well, thank you. I was watching Andy Twitter during the Super Bowl, and it was fun to watch him and others talk about the ads and the game. It felt like a little Super Bowl party.
Really, the fact of the matter is, Leo Laporte, that these are two teams that really came to play football. And the fact is, whoever gets more points on that board by the end of the game is going to walk away with it.
Merlin, the question is Montana hurt, or is he just holding out for free agency?
I got to tell you the truth, Andy. You got to play this game hurt, and if you do let the other team get more points on that board, you're not going to win this football game.
I'm just not convinced that he came to help the ball club.
Yeah. Alex, he didn't have the intestinal fortitude that I like to see.
Alex Lindsay's also here from Pod Show. No, from Pixel Core, unless you have an announcement to make.
You sound like you might be like some kind of a malfunctioning AI.
I think there's something going wrong with my brain.
This internet friend from Pod Tech Show.
I can help you with that.
Unhappy Mac.
Tell me a few things about your internet service.
Sounds like you said yes.
That's my favorite.
Your podcast is important.
And the way he says sounds like, it's like, okay, sounds like you said yes. It's like there's something going on. There's some subtext I'm missing there.
Okay, it sounds like you're screaming obscenities. Let me get you an upright.
Okay, breathe deeply. He's got the Alex Trebek, oh, I'm sorry. Is that the same guy on the Virgin America oxygen mask announcement? Sounds like it.
It might be. That one's really, it's going to be really funny for a little while, and then it's going to get really old.
Last two times I flew it, they didn't use it. I'm wondering.
It's already gotten old.
Scott, you've been on Virgin America recently. Are they still using the pre-recorded safety announcement?
I'm sorry to say I only sit in first class where the videos don't deliver that service.
So they have to actually do it.
They actually do it with the real person.
The minstrels cavort for you in the aisle between your seat and the one in front of you. Yes. We've heard the tambourines here in coach.
No, actually, it's just the let's say, well-seasoned flight attendant who can't be fired due to age discrimination rules who ends up in first class.
No.
Minstrel would not be the word I would use to describe most of them.
I'm sorry, but I can still hear the rattling of oarlocks from the galley. Could you do something about that?
Ramming speed!
I have seen the video in question. I know which one you're talking about. I saw it, I think, on Alex's site, didn't I? Or I don't remember. Alex, I saw part of it while you were playing your video you had done when they were showing off the planes.
Right.
In any event, little news story today. We're going to, in just a bit, we're going to talk to a guy who just opened his brand new Apple IIc. Huh?
Live the dream, folks. Keep saving those pennies. You can live the dream.
The hibernation chamber really works.
Dan Sez will join us in just a little bit. Before that, though, Mike Rahu, Yasoft, what the hell? Microsoft, we talked about this on Twitter, of course, to great length, but I think that Mac people have some interest in this as well. Microsoft's attempt to basically run over the search and advertising industry by buying Yahoo and becoming the biggest player in online mail, online search, online advertising. Are we scared of Microsoft doing this? Google seems to think it's the evil empire. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Okay, the yawns I hear, but let's get Dan on before it goes on too long, because I hear him in the background. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Let me make some noises so that those of you in the listening audience can hear Dan. Merlin, Dan's a friend of yours?
Yes, he is. Hello, Dan. Are you there?
Hey, Merlin. I'm here.
Hello, my friend.
Hi.
And it was all over the interwebs this weekend. Dan got a brand new 2C. Congratulations, Dan.
Thank you so much.
Now, was the two, did he hold off for the 2C Plus?
You know, I had a 2C, the regular.
Oh, see, you're stuck with those 5 1/4 inch floppies. You're really going to regret that, not spending that extra $75. That might be an antiquated product you've got in your hands.
Well, I you can actually buy 5 1/4 inch floppies still.
You know what stuns me is that Apple was still selling this 4 years after they released the Macintosh.
I think even further past. Well, I think 88 was the last year they sold it.
They had an event in 84. Mm-hmm. I remember, called Apple II Forever. At the Moscone Center.
Mm-hmm. Except when it's not forever.
That song. Sort of forever. Forever is 4 years in this case. Well, and, in the Bush presidency, it has seemed like forever, so maybe. So, little dig there on Super Tuesday. Just had to stick something political in. Now I'm going to pull it out. Let's talk about this Apple IIc. Where'd you get it?
I bought it off of eBay.
And why?
I've been looking at these Apple II units for a while. There are a lot of them available on eBay, but a lot of them are showing their age. A lot of them have yellow discoloration from the an agent in the plastic that causes them to turn this disgusting kind of yellow.
Yeah, all the old Apple IIs are kind of yellowed now.
Yeah, so there have been a handful of auctions that have been from, I think most of them have been from resellers who have been awarded these units as like sales incentives. And presumably, the resellers already have a system set up, so they just stick them in their basement and they sit there in their original packaging. And I've let a couple of these auctions slip through my fingers, and this was the one that I managed to get a hold of.
So you didn't think it was a scam of some sort?
No. I was cautiously optimistic, I suppose.
How much did you pay for it?
With shipping, $2,600.
What?
Yeah,
$2,600.
It was.
You lost
it was
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? This just
got less.
Yeah,
less
but
fun.
Guys, no. But at least see, like with Dan, he knows what he's getting into. Whereas Leo goes out and buys a 17-inch Mac like the day before it's EOL'd.
Yeah, that's
so true. I think Dan knew what he was getting into.
Yeah, it was pretty sure that was the.
Well, take into account inflation, and it's about the same, actually. About the same as when it was released.
So are you just normally this slow in deciding what computer you want to buy? You started this process, what, like 10, 12 years ago, and it kind of came around to that's the one I need?
Let me think.
Cautious individual.
You did great. This all came to light, of course, when many sites, Dig, Dan, Gruber, and others showed your pictures of this Laughing Squid. That's where I first saw it. It was on Scott's site. You took the traditional unboxing pictures. We haven't seen it. I don't think they did unboxing in 88, so this is good.
No,
This is good. When I first saw the headline, Apple IIc unboxing pictures, I thought, oh, they must be from 1988. But
nope.
But you do have a shag carpet, so.
Yes.
It could have been. Was this your first computer?
The Apple IIc, yes. Yes, it was my, I mean, my dad had the Apple II Plus and then the Apple IIe, but this one was the first computer that belonged solely to me. It sat in my room, opened it up on Christmas morning in 1986, wow. Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
you like this computer so much, you bought a second one.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have the old one.
No. It's long gone.
This was actually a beautiful design. I really liked the 2C.
It really is gorgeous.
Yeah. And yours isn't yellowed. It's been sealed and out of the sun.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is in the condition that it was the day that it was boxed at the factory.
I think this is one of those units that a lot of people hung on to for a really long time.
Yeah.
Around the time, I mean, because at the time, it was, if memory serves, it was a good deal more to get a Mac. And a lot of people were like, well, why? I've got all my stuff is on this. Like, why would I? This does everything I need. You know, you got the spreadsheets. You know, you got the writing program. It's all there.
Yep.
Looks like Apple printed out the packing list on a Mac, though, I have to say. It looks like that's definitely New York. So you plugged it in. Did you have to put in a floppy to boot it, or?
Oh yes. Oh, you can. You don't necessarily have to, but yeah.
You don't want to boot to the ROM because there's nothing there. So you booted. You booted the floppy. Did you hold your breath while you did this?
Oh yes. It was a grueling 20 seconds or so as I waited for it to boot up. But
remind us, what does the 2C do when it boots up? It doesn't go bong.
No, it's got a little, just a beep, and then you've got this kind of click clack that the disk drive makes as it. Yeah, and then it boots into, well, in this case, I guess ProDOS. With the floppy disks that came with it.
So you have a little blinking prompt there.
Yeah.
Do you have Chopper Command? Anything left over you could play?
You know, I bought a couple of games off of eBay, but the day that I bought it, I only had the disks that came with the computer. I do have somewhere in my parents' basement. Sits a blue floppy disk in the very first program that I ever wrote professionally when I was, I think, 12 years old.
Wow.
I got hooked up with a software writing gig where I wrote a label printer for some company in the industrial park of a small town that I live in. So,
I love the Chopper game.
Chopper, wasn't Chopper Command great?
Choplifter.
Yep. Choplifter may still to this day be my favorite video game ever made.
And it felt so good when you brought those people and you saved them. They came running.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. It's a great game.
And it's green.
I can see why you paid $2,600 if you got Choplifter.
Now, this isn't a green screen monitor, though. This is a color monitor.
No, it's actually a monochrome, but
But it is CRT. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Load Runner, did you get anything good? I mean...
I'm actually sitting tight because there's actually an application out there that will allow you to hook to your Mac and push down disk images through a serial cable.
Oh.
So
you can have everything.
Yeah.
So the key is to get Aztec. That was like that was the end of my, that was like hours and hours and hours of good Apple II fun.
Are you going to keep it set up in a place of honor in your house, Dan?
It's sitting to the left of me right now on my desk. So, yeah.
I don't want to mention that there are free emulators that will emulate the 2C and all the games.
Oh, come on. You don't think this is kind of cool?
It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Yeah, it's totally not the same. This is totally bad. I totally get this. I totally just bought a 1961 Yahtzee game off of eBay. Like, yeah, I could go down
all
to
right,
Walgreens.
All right,
but
all
I
right.
want the well, guy I want the guy with the mortarboard.
My feelings are very mixed on this one, guys, because I am a 10-year veteran of the MIT flea market. As I speak right now, to my immediate left, within reach, is a diagnostic panel from a 1971 mainframe Burroughs sorting machine, because it's got all those cool Apollo era switches and lights. I've got a whole storage unit full of cool stuff that I just had to have. But all this cool stuff I had to have, I have 2Cs, 2C pluses, WAS machines. I got the black Apple II. I got all the other Apple IIs. But all this stuff, my upper threshold for this is typically $40 to $50. I don't know if I could pull the trigger on $2,700.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Mint in box?
Mint in box anymore.
You
got to
take it out and play with it. It's just that would I rather have that or like 10 days in London having
no,
fun?
No, no, no. Come on.
It's still $300.
Dan has spent the money already. Let's not make him feel bad about it. I just want to know if you're going to remodel your living room to be 1988 vintage so it's appropriate for this.
Oh, well, I already have
the show. Never going to lift you up. Never going to let you down.
Yeah, you have to only play 80s music.
You can pick up Wang Chung pretty cheap on eBay.
$2,600. So, yeah, because then people would like go come in your house and think, wait a minute. Oh, my God. Have I stepped back in time? And you could like give them a moment, a little thrilling moment of like.
Maybe it could be November 1st, 1988. It could be like right before Bush got. Well, never mind.
The first Bush.
Exactly. It just you freeze the moment in time before the Bush thing started. No, I'd visit that.
Yeah, that really. That, well, there was a time before there were Bushes and Clintons in the White House. A time we dimly remember.
There, Leo.
I threw the Clinton in just for fun.
Wonderful times. We look back on 8 years of Reagan and look forward to 4 years of Reagan term number three.
Reagan light.
I want to come back to.
You guys realize we're going to get email now.
You know what? It's funny. We used to get a lot more. I think that many of the Republicans listening now are hiding. Anyway, we love our Republican listeners.
We do. Thank you. For listening.
Yes.
The blimp industry would just cease to exist if it weren't for the Republicans.
I want to say that I actually think this is kind of cool. Buying an old computer and, you know, caring for it and preserving it.
I can see you doing this, actually, Scott.
Yeah, I was about to say, I can see it's kind of cool if you don't have anything but money to burn. Now,
That's what I meant.
Said Scott. I would totally do this with an SE30 with like a big ass monitor. I would totally do this.
Well, that's what you were looking for your backpack, right?
I don't know if you guys heard about this, but apparently, anyway, no, seriously, I still contend. I want to prove this.
Guys, I'm just going to disappear for a second because Microsoft's calling about my Xbox. So you just talk amongst yourselves. Go ahead, Jessica.
Now, could we make a backpack out of
Red Ring of Death, the three-segment red light. Yep.
Leo really talking to Microsoft?
Yeah, I think he is.
You should put him on, see if we can get some inside dope.
This would be fun.
I'd like to get some answers.
Since this is 1988, right. Could you give him ask him a question about multiplan? Because I keep waiting for like the 1.25-inch floppy upgrade, but it's not coming.
Yeah, and could you ask him to freeze Word's functionality at Word 6?
I do have an 80-column card.
I would really freeze it at 5.1.
I do have a shift key modification on my Apple II.
Which was the one that installed like 30 extensions? Which one?
No,
was
I think
that?
5.1 was really the last great Word.
You're right. I think that was. So 1988, you would have been on what Mac OS? That would be Mac OS 6. Right? Would have been.
Yeah. 7 came on like 89, I think. Didn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little later than that. Maybe 90, 91 that 7 came out. I got an Apple II, or I got the CI, I think was my.
Oh yeah, was that one of the wasn't a pizza box. That was one of the thicker ones.
Yeah, that was a thicker one. I bought it all decked out with like I had 122 megabyte hard drive in it, and everyone was like,
"You would never. Why would you buy a hard drive that big? That's ridiculous."
Because I was doing audio production.
No, you could never fill 122 meg hard drive.
That's what everyone told me, and I did. I filled it quickly.
I had a Jasmine backpack. I had a 20 meg Jasmine backpack, and it seemed ludicrous. Like, what would I ever put on 20 megs?
I was looking on eBay. You know, there is an Apple IIe right now that's available for $100. They say it's fully functional. It's not new. It's not as pretty as.
Was that the sound of Leo slamming his head against the microphone?
Oh, that's the sound of me slamming my head against the microphone. I know I'm not a young person, but I'm not old enough to talk about 80s nostalgia just yet.
We're just waiting for Leo to come back. We were just building. No,
so here's the thing. When you guys mentioned ProDOS,
it's going to cost how much? My God, you sons of bitches! I can't finance your Yahoo purchase and get another Xbox. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. We'll fix this all in post.
No, they were fine. I had a Red Ring of Death, and this is the power of the Twitter. I mentioned this last week. I Twittered it, so I'm getting special treatment. I got a call from Jessica.
I need to get more active on Twitter.
You know what they do? Because this is the thing that Microsoft's put aside $1 billion to fix. They send you a box. You put the thing in the box, and they send you, and then they fix it and send it back.
Because you don't want to piss off people who spend 18 hours a day figuring out ways to blow up Germans.
That's right.
You want to keep those people happy, especially in America, where you can easily convert that into an analog experience with just $50.
guess what? There are a couple of things they might not have told you when you bought this computer, Dan. Mm-hmm. What is in that document?
I have no idea. let me pull it out.
You have all the documents, which is great. I mean, there is a certain thing. Now, I wonder if you fill out the registration card and send it in, do you think you could actually melt down Apple's customer service computer?
You know, the consensus seems to be on the Flickr thread that I'm obligated to send in the registration.
I think you have to register it. I bet you get a call.
What I'm going to do is I'm actually just going to photocopy the registration card.
Keep the children at least 18 feet away. Close all the doors on the room around. Do not go back into the house. We'll be sending a hazmat team in. Thank God we finally heard from the last person who had this.
I figure I better include a cover letter, so I'm gonna pull up a copy of PFS Write and take some letterhead with Print Shop.
Magic Window. Come on, you're a fool for not going with Magic Window.
You do have an Apple dot matrix printer, I hope.
No, but actually one of the virtual environments will let you print to PDF.
Ah, perfect.
So
perfect.
I've played around with Print Shop a bit last night.
Dan, what's next on your shopping list?
Software. Something to hold all the software. I'm looking for a floppy disk case of some sort.
Well, what Dan's not telling you is that he has one of the sexiest apartments in New York. He's been, weren't you in that apartment therapy for having a sexy apartment?
Yeah, it was a fall colors contest.
So I'm very interested to see where this ends up.
Yeah.
No, and Dan's the thing is that also Dan's tidy. So this is gonna. I've seen pictures. His apartment does not look like mine. I'm sure this is gonna end up someplace looking really cool.
Apartment looks like yours, Merlin. But not many people have roller skaters next door. So that's the upside. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. The pictures are online. Dan's Flickr account is Dan Says, DanSays. Do you have a blog we can plug too?
DanSays.com. It's kind of a placeholder right now, but eventually it will turn into something.
Now's your opportunity.
Yep.
Run. Dan Says is Dan Budiak, a web developer who lives in the East Village in his Fall Colors apartment.
Question is, can you do a blog from your Apple IIe?
Ooh.
And that would be tasty.
Ooh.
Clear your calendar, Dan. You have software to write.
That's a great idea. Well, you can do it in
storage. I have a copy of the Merlin Assembler if you actually want to use that for a little extra verisimilitude.
Was it really called the Merlin Assembler?
Well, that was the best one that I used. I also have a copy of, I think, Mr. Root's Assembly Lines, the book. As a matter of fact, hang on. I have my copy within reach. One moment, please.
Nice.
He's going to read a little assembly code now for us, a little dramatic reading, a little 6502 assembler.
I can actually remember to do a little 6502 assembly.
That was actually a fairly easy processor to write for because it was...
Yes,
somebody's talking about making a 32-bit 6502.
I have a good resource library. It's also my Audible pick of the week, by the way. Assembly Lines, the book, A Beginner's Guide to 6502 Programming on the Apple II by Roger Wagner.
He reads it himself.
Line 35.
Well, you know,
this section may well serve as a
comma.
I got bad at assembly because when I bought my Apple II and they had the built-in BASIC, I just used Go subroutines and I didn't need to do
6502. Spoils you.
I was thinking Apple DOS 3.3 when you guys were talking ProDOS, and I realized I am old.
ProDOS. That was the
ProDOS is new compared to Apple DOS.
Improved. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Dan.
All right, thanks, Leo.
All right, take care. Enjoy your 2C. $2,600. Wow.
You got to admire the guy.
I thought he was going to say $26.
No, it's
not a box. You knew it was going to be somewhere. There, but
can you go to eBay now and order something similar?
You can get an Apple IIe for $500,
This just gave me a great idea, guys. I'm going to buy one of everything at the Apple Store and put it in a garage for 20 years. Try to find Dan's progeny and see if they want to buy.
There you go.
I have a better idea, especially for like all you listeners out there. If you do happen to own a 5.25-inch floppy box, you know who's willing to pay top gear now. I'm putting this copy of Beneath Apple ProDOS in a Mylar bag with a backing board, acid free. I'm gonna send it out and see if I can get a gem 9.4 rating on it.
Those pages will brown if you're not careful. Wow. All right, let's get to some of the news. There's some big news. We were going to talk about Microsoft and Yahoo, but nobody seemed to nibble on that one. There's not. I mean, go ahead.
I don't think I'm not sure how I know this sounds odd to say, but I just don't know if it'll be very successful. You know, I know that it could be. It's one of those things that if it was very successful, obviously would cause a lot of damage. But it just seems like you're matching up two companies that...
two losers.
It just could be, you know, you have a lot of cultural stuff that would go in between. And
when losers mate, it doesn't create a beauty queen.
Okay, Microsoft, I would love to own stock in a company that's losing as badly as Microsoft is. And I use and rely a lot of Yahoo losers stuff.
But so, both companies are struggling of late. You can't deny that.
I really don't think it's fair at all to call either company a loser. I think what we can say is that when you look at when two behemoths meet, I mean, I remember when the AOL Time Warner stuff, like their idea of synergy was like a 1/8 inch bar across the top of each page saying, click here to go to CNN. And that was the best they could come up with. I mean, if there's anything you learn in this stuff, it's that culture matters. And when you try and slam two companies together, somebody, I forget who it was, it might have been Daniel Punkass said this. Somebody was saying, you know, it's like, if you tie two turkeys together, you don't get an eagle. And I think that's the case here. I mean, they're on their own. I'm much more interested in this, the second story, which is the idea of Google doing some kind of an infusion into Yahoo to let them concentrate on what they're good at. Let Google do the search and the ads and let Yahoo be Yahoo. I think that's really interesting.
I think that one makes a lot more sense.
It makes me a lot happier. I'll say
let
that.
Let Yahoo be Yahoo. Actually, I was, when we talked about it on Twitter, I was one of those people who said, oh, this is ridiculous. Nothing to fear here. But as soon as Google shortly later that day came out with that, the chief counsel with that kind of weird, whiny blog post.
No, wait. That was all calculated. Here's why. As soon as Google got big and successful, it went from underdog status to, you know, all the young guys hate it now because they're successful and you got to hate anybody who's successful. Now they're back to being the underdog. It's great PR for them.
Well, exactly. I mean, Google really is a monopoly. I mean, there's search.
Exactly. Now they can act like, see, we're not the big bad wolf. Look at them over there. They're the big bad wolf.
It looked like that blog post was calculated to kind of say to Yahoo, hey, come on. And I'm sure Yahoo's talking to them.
Yeah, I mean, the language in that statement was not, hey, we're looking forward to being the underdog again. It was regulators. Investors, beware that we're going to be fighting this. And we're going to try to make it very, very difficult for this thing to happen. And we're going to start with grassroots support, but also realize that we have founders who invest in space flight. That's the sort of money that we have access to. And we think that we can do a good job of poisoning the soup here.
That's the other side of the coin. Definitely, they want to make it as expensive for their competitors as they can. So they are going to defend on that level. But I still think it's a good PR move for them. At the end of the day, one the most interesting aspect of all this is it will force Microsoft to do something that I don't recall them having to do in a long dang time, which is to borrow money.
That's the surprising thing. They had to go to borrow money. Don't they have $46 billion?
I think they just don't want to use it all.
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I was surprised. Their cash on hand, I mean, I made a joke about it last week. Their cash on hand isn't as great as I thought it was. And part of the news we should report on this week is that Apple did something they don't usually do. They assured investors with a statement from Steve Jobs since we last spoke. And they got $18 billion. Apple has $18 billion on cash. And if I read the numbers right, and I haven't double-checked this, but I think Microsoft's only at about 30. Somebody, I'm sure, will correct me, but whatever the exact number is, I don't have it in front of me. But they don't have as much cash on hand as I thought they did, and this would put them in a more vulnerable position, and then Apple would be in cash-rich catbird seat. So in that Apple's regard, always, it's an interesting thing.
As long as I can remember, Apple's always made sure to have a lot of cash on hand.
Yeah, they got a staggering $18 billion for the size of their company. That's a bunch.
Yeah,
and that's historic. Even when their stock was at something like 12 3/8, and there were a lot of the mainstream press was talking about, they're going to get bought out by Sony, they're going to get bought out by this, that, and the other. The fact remains that even back then, they had enough money to buy themselves out if they had to.
Right.
Well, it seemed to work too. That announcement seemed to work because all the analysts this week put them on buy, and several people are put them at a 250.
Are you going to get back in?
I can't for legal reasons. Okay. I wish I could. And besides, it takes the bullets out of all my enemies' clips. Now they can't say everything I'm saying. I'm saying because I'm a stockholder.
No, I think it's good. I think it's good.
Yeah. Now they're going to have to actually think about what I said as opposed to just saying, Scott said that because he's a stockholder.
What's interesting?
I do not care.
What's interesting is Microsoft actually, so they've paid out nearly $100 billion in dividends and repurchasing their own stock in the past 5 years. So they could have done it in cash. I mean, this is an argument possibly for keeping more cash on hand to make these big purchases, but they had specifically...
Yeah, that's right. They bought a lot of their own stock back.
Right. So that's been, that's why they have to borrow. And it is about $29 to $30 billion that they have, you know, pocket change. Yeah. You know.
That's, to me, the most interesting part of this whole deal. But I don't think that it's... I don't think it's as huge for Mac users, obviously, as it might be for Yahoo or Microsoft users.
Yeah, but we're all Google users. We're all Yahoo users to some degree. So it's a, and of course Yahoo, remember, did the mail thing for iPhone.
Push mail for iPhone, right? Plus, I mean, the widgets that they've got in there depend on Yahoo. That wouldn't be a big loss. The only thing that was I found a little bit concerning were some rumors that started to spread that Apple might be in the bidding to buy Yahoo, which of course is a stupid.
Don't do that.
Which is a stupid rumor. It has absolutely no foundation. It was just speculation. Right. But that's the sort of thing where if analysts and other people start to think that Apple might buy something that's stupid and frivolous, I was about to say something uncharitable about a previous guest, but I'm not going to say that.
they might buy an Apple IIc. Yeah. Bring back the Apple IIc.
I won't pay a dime less than $800 billion for Yahoo.
All right, $900 billion. That's my final offer.
No, I think Apple is better at sticking to its knitting. And I guess that's my question for Microsoft is what is your business? I mean, are you, the only thing they've ever made money on is operating systems and software.
Well, the thing is that I don't know if they know what their business is. And I think that the dangerous thing for Microsoft is that they go into debt and they use up a lot of their cash reserves and they don't have a clear vision of what, you know, which way to go.
Right.
It could be a really fascinating turn of events.
Well, and Bill Gates might have to come out of retirement.
No. All this while Mac's market share hit a record last month, or actually, in January. I'm sorry, December, 7.5% market share, according to Net Applications. That's a huge growth.
Doesn't seem like that long ago. They were only at 4.
Yeah. Up 21% from January 2007.
Well, and a lot of that has been in the portable arena, hasn't it? I mean, that's the largest. I think that the numbers...
No, this is OS X.
Oh, I understand that. Okay, just OS X in general.
This is OS X compared to Windows.
I got it.
Okay. So OS X's market share actually up 7.31% in December, 7.5% in January. That's a 3%, almost 4% gain, while Windows dropped 0.36%. Linux is up even more. Linux is up 6%, although still a tiny market share. And iPhone up 8%. I don't know of what. I guess overall market share or overall operating system market share. So iPhone has
about 7 months old.
I know, 0.13%. But I mean, Windows, let's not, you know, Windows is still 91.46% of the market, but this is a big jump for Apple. And a lot of the people who have always poo-pooed Macintosh have pointed to that 3 or 4% market share saying, see, it can't be that good, really. Well, now it's twice that.
Well, and I think that you also are looking at, I mean, Apple has a very, very successful computer business at 7.5%. You can only imagine what happens if they follow what some analysts are saying that they may double their.
And remember, they're a single manufacturer that makes. Windows is sold to hundreds, thousands of manufacturers. So it's almost a different ball game.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to follow and see if they can continue to claim market share. If they can, they don't see. That's just it.
When I don't want them to.
When you're dealing with numbers like this, if you make it to 8 or 9,
right.
You know you're. You're doing just fine.
That's plenty growth. I would hate to see Apple be more than, you know, a small percent. Wouldn't you? I mean, I feel like...
They might be tempted to lose their Maverick image.
Yeah, and we'd be a target.
I think more than 15% would be really... I think at that point, we'd start really seeing the change in what we have, you know, now.
Yep. Apple's actually created a new series of switcher videos. I mean, clearly they're paying attention to this.
Yep.
They,
this is the how-to site that they put up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
good.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. They're, you know, it's a typical Apple, you know, it's very clean. It's not particularly edgy or anything. It's just this very clean. We show you exactly how to do the stuff. Very methodical, very well thought out, very, you know, well organized.
Apple.com/find out how. All one word. Find out how. So is it that guy? Because he gives me the creeps. There's something about him.
believe it is that guy, if I remember correctly. Oh.
That guy.
That guy in the turtleneck on the white background, you know. There's something about him that just bugs me a little bit.
When you get a new Mac, a setup assistant helps you set up your internet connections, mail accounts,
and basic
settings.
No, this is somebody different. This is a younger guy.
So you can get started using your Mac right away.
That sounds like almost like Justin Long, practically. So that's the anatomy of a Mac. There's a 2.5 minute move to Mac. There's a 2.5 minute Windows on a Mac. Interesting. And it says there's a free human with every purchase. Now that's got to cost some money. That's right at the bottom there. Free human with every retail store has a staff of trainers. That's a good point. You know, you don't see that. Microsoft doesn't do anything like that, really, do they?
Yeah, he's a Cornell grad. Don't tell you that until after you've bought it.
Like, come over to your house. I think that's Apple. Good for Apple for doing that. I think that's a good idea. That's the kind of thing that people are always asking me. Well, where can I go to find out more about switching? I think they're smart to respond to that. Apple also announces a 16 gigabyte iPhone and a 32 gigabyte iTouch.
Well, my source was right. He just was 3 weeks late.
Ah, but no HSDPA. In fact, no changes in the iPhone at all. Just more memory.
No, we did have one report which I made earlier, which said there were two versions. One would be the point of view that we'd have two separate phones, and this apparently makes that one to be correct. The other one was that we'd see it all at once. The thing that's stupefying me, and I'm just begging for somebody to tell me the answer, is why didn't we hear about this 3 weeks ago at Macworld? What's the possible reason? It's not because it would steal thunder from MacBook Air, because he talked about other iPhone-related stuff.
It is odd, isn't it?
Maybe it just wasn't ready yet.
Yeah, but, well...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, neither was Apple TV, and he announced it.
Oh, you're saying announce it, like, with an upcoming
update? Yeah.
Why didn't he say what? My only thinking is maybe they were afraid it would hurt 8 gig sales in the 3 week intro.
Ah, that must be it.
Maybe it was a Steve Jobs temper tantrum. It was supposed to be ready, and it wasn't, so he said, screw it, I'm taking it out.
Yeah. Clearing or out maybe, the inventory.
Maybe it's something to do with the fact that you've essentially tripled the amount of memory that's in play, the DRAM, and it's possible they want to have those supplies pretty much locked down for the buying system.
But they must have been manufacturing them. I mean, they're shipping now.
Yeah, but there's a whole bunch of strategic things going on to try to figure out to make sure what's the most opportune time to release this. Mm. It's definitely going to be before applications for the iPhone and the iPod Touch start rolling out, because that's going to change the economy of what represents a realistic amount of memory for an iPhone or for an iPod Touch. So, but it might not have been a good idea to roll it out at the same time as the software development kit either.
Right.
So.
So it's right between, because the software development kit comes out sometime in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I talked to Jaws this morning, and there's still no update on the SDK as far as a firm shipping date, but it's definitely on track to be released by the end of the month, as they've said.
It's 32 gigs. It must be the largest flash player in the market. Nobody's doing anything that big, are they, in flash? I mean, that's bigger than my hard drive iPod.
I think it's as big as it gets right now.
I ordered one immediately. I mean, that's what I've been waiting for. I'm thrilled about that.
How many of these has Samsung made is what I want to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although it's interesting. I was trying to figure it out this morning that if there is an actual sweet spot for storage on these sort of devices where anything above this amount of storage is nice but not essential. I tend to think that on an iPhone or an iPod Touch, 8 gigs is perfectly fine. 16 gigs is probably the sweet spot. I have a 16 gig iPod Touch and an 8 gig iPhone. I find that I almost never bump my head on the ceiling of the iPhone, and I almost always have a few gigs free on the Touch because, I mean, iTunes does such a great job of letting me automatically turn the device into a rolling window over my 100 gigabyte media library. I don't need to have 3 weeks worth of content on it, so long as I have enough to last me until the next time I dock the device.
I'm just thinking, though, I'm going to put a lot of video on this thing.
Yeah, I think that's where the pain comes, and it's interesting in terms of what feels like a strategy is to start providing more of that room.
I really do
think this is more about applications than anything else, because you're going to have more stuff being stored locally.
Not,
I'm not talking about the applications. I'm talking about RSS readers that will download podcasts directly to the device.
I like that.
I'm talking about things that convert YouTube videos directly into playable iTunes library files on the device.
Yeah.
I'm talking about having a halfway decent office suite, mobile office suite, and now wanting to and now wanting to carry 2 or 3 gigabytes worth of Office files using the device as a viewer and an editor while you're on the road, but also using it as a storage device when you're connected to your iMac or to your Windows machine.
You still want that little touch computer. That's what you want. That's what you're saying this is turning into.
I think all freedom-loving Americans and Americans at heart living abroad would want such a device. But so many times, I'm now in the habit, my workflow with the iPhone is so locked in at this point that whenever I file my newspaper column, it automatically gets CC'd to my iPhone so that when I have my celebratory, you know, hey, I made another deadline for another week, I deserve pancakes, breakfast, you know, of course, there's going to be a phone call about an hour later saying, okay, we had a really long discussion. We're pretty sure that this word is not really a word. We just wanted to check with you.
You can refer to it on your iPhone.
I mean, well, not just refer to it, but be able to make it. And sometimes I wind up having to do a rewrite or an edit over the phone. And as is, it turns into, let's just take a look. Let's write some things down on a little notepad that I've got handy and then read it over the phone. Just like, you know, the Kennedy assassination got covered, you know, when you had to dictate things over the phone.
But it also makes sense if you're renting movies and you're selling movies, you want a large capacity portable device that people could put.
Oh, absolutely. And more is always more. One question that I asked specifically was I asked Jaws the sweet spot question, and he was talking about, well, thing is, we had the 8 gig iPhone and the 4 gig iPhone, and people just weren't interested in the lesser of two.
Yeah.
So now we'll find out whether or not 8 gigs is what people like, or whether they will always just prefer having the largest capacity phone that we make.
You pay a premium, $499 for the 16 gig iPhone or the 32 gig Touch. That's $500.
That's not a hell of a lot of premium over what you're paying for the lesser model. What I would have found interesting is if they make a 32 gig iPhone and make it only as part of the 3G chipset, meaning that it's not just this one storage feature that you're getting, but you're getting it as part of a larger package. I'm wondering if that will drive people to say, you know what, I don't feel as though I need these extra features, but I will happily pay $150 or $200 more to have twice as much storage as I might on a 16 gig model.
I think that the $100 price bump is, I think we're going to see that basically people who are new to the market, who are just buying a new iPhone, that won't be a hiccup to them at all. They'll pay the extra $100. It's $100 less than the phone originally came out at.
Right.
And I bet that they'll, you know, from now on, everybody will just buy the 16 gig phone.
How do you think the Touch does? Is that going to be desirable at that price?
I think it'll be more desirable if they finally enable disk mode on these devices.
Yeah, I don't understand why not. Then it'd be great. You'd have this big disk as well.
Better than that.
I was talking to an Apple engineer actually who had a bit of a fit. He worked on the iPod team, and he was like, you know, those drives aren't designed to work that way. you can't keep on using them that way. They're not going to last.
Especially the flash ones.
They're built to playback video. They're built to playback, audio. They're not built to be used as a hard drive. And he said, if you keep it, the way you read and write on those drives is completely different than the way it plays back that stuff. And it puts a lot more stress on the drive in a way that it's just not designed to handle.
Well, we heard that a lot on the hard drive iPods, and I haven't seen that happen.
I talked to an engineer at Toshiba because I was trying to chase down exactly that explanation. And he said you don't want to boot from it. Excuse me. Well, he said that you don't want to use it as a swap drive,
right?
But he said that using it as a standard storage device is well within its design specs.
To pull stuff off, to put stuff on.
Meaning as a device to have documents on that you read from and write to.
Don't run
not
it.
A, not that's not so much as a swap. Meaning it's something that you boot off of where it's constant and boot off of with 512K of real memory on your iMac, and running Photoshop and Office at the same time. So it's always writing to the drive.
Right.
Yeah, there's a good chance that you won't be able to listen to ABBA on the way back home if you keep doing that to the drive.
Right.
But being used as a standard USB pocket drive is well within the specs for that mechanism, is what Toshiba told me.
Apple must now be easily the largest consumer of flash memory, with the 64 gig hard drive and the Air and these big capacity iPhone and iPod. I mean, they must be eating this stuff.
Yep. I think I saw
a statistic that they were doing 90% of it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like what search technology is to Google is what flash memory is to Apple. I mean, they're the people who would just own the entire thing.
Any other stories before we get to our picks?
I think we have to just at least talk about or mention them, at least briefly, my personal disappointment at the Apple TV delay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep every day.
I was sort of slipped under the rug.
Yeah. They said, how long did they say? They just said it's not going to be out.
Another couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. A
couple of weeks is kind of like for Apple. It's like the indeterminate amount of time.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like, come on. The whole thing's weird to me that that's all. They just sort of, oh, yeah, and by the way, it's going to be a couple of weeks late. I don't know. It starts to feel like Vista creep.
I feel like I really think that for me, the number one thing right now is with the rentals is just moving from 24 to 48 because I was really excited about the Apple TV and then I missed a movie that I had rented for 24 hours, you know, that I'd started and then I didn't get to watch it. And then I lost complete interest. You know, I was just like, I'm past.
You do not want to be dead to Alex.
He's dead to me.
It was DTM, dead to me.
DTM, dead to me.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah, so I was over it. I'm just waiting. And now I was just like, well, eventually Apple's going to figure this out and they're going to fix it. So I'll just wait until they do that. And then I went back along my merry business. So.
All right, let's get to, first, before we get to our picks, our Audible commercial. Let's call a spade a spade. I was going to say our Audible pick of the week or whatever. No, it's a commercial for Audible, audible.com/MacBreak. We do love being part of the Audible family, of course. We're all Audible. I don't know if we're all, but I certainly am, and I know Andy is. Audible listeners, I know many of you are. Audible.com/MacBreak is a place to go to sign up and get yourself a credit toward a book. Lots of great books on Audible. I don't think, as yet, there are any 6502 assembly language programming books, but who knows? Yeah, I'm going to do a keyword search for 6502. Nope.
Well, actually, you know, I know that people at Audible are listening. So I'd like to audition for it from Chapter 3 of Assembly Lines, the book, The Status Register. Here at last is our representation of a single byte made up of 8 bits. In particular, the byte we are looking at is the status register of the 6502, consisting of the sign bit, the overflow bit, the break bit. See, exactly.
They can sell it as a sleep aid, I think.
I'm so much cheaper than Liam Neeson. I don't know why I don't get more work from Audible.
You read it beautifully.
Just put that on your card.
So much cheaper than Liam Neeson. I wonder if that URL is available.
Just cheaper than Liam. You don't even have to say so much. Just cheaper.
Yes.
Cheaper than Liam. So I don't know if we have a book. Last time you picked Scott Dune, which I've downloaded now and I'm reading and it's wonderful. I've also been listening to Dirk Gently. Another excellent choice.
I have a cool one. One of the adjutant sort of book searches where I was looking for one book in particular from this author that they did not have this one, but they did have another great one by an author by the name of Dave Gorman. A lot of you listeners are probably thinking, oh, the guy who did Are You Dave Gorman, which was the book I was looking for. He followed that up with another sort of adventure book where he seems to spend a lot of his time thinking up ideas for obsessive compulsive world spanning adventures that he then, after having thought of it, his nature is that he now has to actually do this. So the name of this book is Dave Gorman's Google Whack Adventure. lots of you folks know what a Google Whack is. It's if you plug two and only two words into the Google search engine and it returns only one and only one page that contains those two words, what you've discovered is a Google Whack. And Dave Gorman, well, after the success of the first book, he got a contract to write a novel. And as a way of avoiding having to write the novel, he started getting interested in Google Whacks.
It's a real good time killer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, you don't know the meaning of time killers. I thought that I was good at, like, under deadline pressure, finding ways to avoid doing the thing I'm supposed to be doing. What he decided to do is he found his first Google Whack, and he, you know, decided to email the person letting him know that, hey, you know, that your webpage is a Google Whack. And then he decided to travel to where this person was and meet him.
Oh, my God.
And then this person found two more Google Whacks. So he decided to go meet somebody else. So he decided to try to see if he could do 10 Google Whacks in a row this way, meeting somebody whose webpage is a Google Whack, then wherever they live, and then getting them to generate a Google Whack, and then meeting that person. It's obviously there's a certain amount of obsessive compulsive disorder,
no
a certain
kidding.
Amount of disorder period in this, because meanwhile, there's thrilling tales of adventure of ducking emails from his editor who are wondering, why are you in Tunisia right now?
Yeah,
that's, you know, as a freelancer, I know that I don't have a good answer to the question of, gee, your thing was due 3 days ago. What are you doing in Tunisia? But he has an answer. And it's a great story. Again, there are so many ups and so many downs, and you think that, well, at some point here, he's just going to give up, or he's going to reach that point where he says, no, this is getting just silly. It was was a lot of fun to do all this traveling and meet these people. But no, it turns out that he really is that dedicated. But just like with his first book, and if you do have a chance to find Are You Dave Gorman, definitely search it out, because it's definitely one of my favorite books, one of those books I wind up rereading every year or two. It's a celebration of random people in the world, that almost everybody has a great story to tell, and almost everybody is really interesting to meet. Very few of us have that spirit of, again, OCD, adventure, and having, you know, a big five-figure advance check to support yourself with to meet just random people for the most flimsiest of reasons. But he tends to celebrate humanity in every page.
Sounds
of this book.
Really, really fun. Cool. Here's a little bit of Dave Gorman's Google Whack Adventure, read by Dave Gorman.
Francophile, noun, one who admires France and the French. Namesakes, noun, plural of namesake, a person or thing with the same name as another. A lot of people find turning 30 a bit traumatic. They realize how little they've achieved and decide it's time to take life a little more seriously. Perhaps the hope is that if they take life a bit more seriously, life might take them a bit more seriously in return.
Now, I have to say that, unfortunately, sometimes these samples, they are lower quality than the actual download. You can download in three different quality levels on Audible, depending on the device you're using and how much storage you have. You can download, that's probably a 16 kilobit file, but they have full quality MP3s, and that's what I usually download and listen to on my iPhone or my new Touch. Dave Gorman's Google Whack Adventure, 3 hours of Google mirth. Now, normally this would be $17, but you can get it free just by going to audible.com/MacBreak. That's just one of 45,000 plus titles for this political season. Lots of stuff from both the Republicans and the Democrats that you can read. Debates and so forth available for free. Audible has always been really good at this, and they always have special events, special occasions, and lots of interesting stuff to listen to. Fill your mind and fill your iPod. audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank them for their support. I'm going to read that. I tell you, this is the problem, Andy. Every time I ask you for a recommendation, now there's another book I got to read.
There you go.
Sounds good. I can't wait. Who wants to start with a pick? Raise your hands. Show of hands. Anybody? Scott Bourne? Alex wins. Alex, go ahead.
So mine is, we've talked about iStat Pro in the past. I think Craig Severson talked about it, but I use that. I mean, it's great to have a dashboard widget that does that, but there is another application that I use probably more than almost any application that I, you know, because I'm always looking at it, which is iStat Menus, which is a slightly different version of this. What iStat Menus does is it you know, embeds into your menu. So you when you install it, you have a heads-up display at the top of your computer that shows you how much your CPU is being used, your upload and download speeds, how much your hard drive's full, the temperature, and whether your fans are going. You know, all these little things that, and the one that I use the most, to be honest, is for me, when we're doing diagnostic stuff, I'm always looking at CPU while I'm working to see how much of my CPU I'm using. But most importantly, knowing what that up and down speed is, you know that something's dragging, you know, something's downloading or something isn't, or am I getting a good connection or I'm not. And it's just, it's a really, really great application. And it is, I believe it is, it's free. It's freeware. It's not even shareware. It's freeware.
Nice.
And it is so valuable. You know, they have things that'll drop down into calendars, that'll show stuff. But the thing that I use the most is making sure that I can see what's going on in my network, and the flow on my network. And I just find that extremely useful, especially when I'm traveling and I'm trying to decide whether I really have a good connection or whether it's something going on in the application. So anyway, that's it. iStat Menus at iSlayer.com.
iSlayer.com. Yeah, I think it's also free. I use menu meters. I think I've even made it a pick before. Similar idea, but it's, especially if you have a multi-CPU system, it's really useful to know what's going on in there. Very useful. All right, iStat. And I use iStat as well on the, there's a dashboard application as well. All right, Scott Bourne, your turn.
My pick, unfortunately, is not free. A little bit north of an Alex, in fact. But if you're a photographer and you want to show off your pictures, this is probably the coolest thing I've seen. I went to Las Vegas last week for the Photo Marketing Association trade show. It's the largest photo trade show in the world, with the exception of Photokina. And I walked around a corner and saw this beautiful digital photo frame. And we've all seen them before. They're like 5 by 6 inches. And, you know, you put photos on there and you thumb through them. But this one was 32 inches.
Wow.
It is the biggest one in the world.
That's bigger than my monitor.
From Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really cool. It's a nice looking frame. Looks like any piece of framed art. It just has a 32-inch digital display. Now, it's the only thing it's a little odd about it is it's 16 by 9. So a lot of people shoot 4:3, and so your pictures, you know, you'd have to kind of think about 16 by 9 or maybe creating collages to fill the 16 by 9 screen. I've got a lot of 16 by 9 shots because, you know, I know a guy named Alex Lindsay who's got me thinking 16 by 9 since I was 8 years old. But for the average person, 4 by 3 is the way they shoot. So that's the only negative I saw. But the picture quality was really good. Now, you don't look at a 32-inch frame from 2 inches away. You know,
that's over the fireplace stuff.
Yeah, this is over the fireplace stuff. And, you know, $899. And what's the cool thing about it that I've never seen on any of these frames, it actually has the ability to hook up to a printer. So wow. You can actually say, hey, I want to print that photo.
Wow, that's neat.
So check it out. It'll be shipping within a week or two.
How much?
It's $8.99 from a company called Smart Parts.
Boy, that's
also,
not bad at all.
Also could be thought of as a third of a 2C.
There you go, a third of a 2C. Or a little bit more than Alex. Smart Parts is the company. I'm not familiar with them.
But if you figure you're going to spend twice that for a 30-inch monitor, that's not a bad price.
Yeah, and you could put 2 or 3 of these things up in your house and you know, pull a Bill Gates like he does the art in his house, changing all the time. Yeah. It's actually large enough to really be enjoyable.
Scott, are there any power management features on it? Because it seems like that really costs a lot of money to keep running all the time.
You know, they wouldn't let me get close enough to see that. The one I saw was a beta. In fact, the sole working prototype that they have. They wouldn't let me get into too far to it. But I'm certainly hoping that it had some sort of either, you know, screen save, shutdown mode or whatever, because that was one of my very first questions, Andy.
Awesome.
Very cool.
We will report on that once. They're allegedly sending me a review unit.
What's the company again?
Smart Parts.
Smart Parts.
Wow. Well, I never heard of them. I don't know anything about them. I don't know what their reliability is, but I can tell you that the panel looks good.
Very good. Mylan Man, what do you got for us?
Well, I think we all agree that there are bits about Spotlight that are kind of cool. And I think, you know, looking at Spotlight and using it, you go, this is kind of so almost where I want it to be, but parts about it really vex me. That's how I feel anyway. And I just discovered this morning off the Mac Gems website. Have you guys seen this? It's called Huda Spot.
Huda?
H-O-U-D-A-H. I think that's how it's pronounced.
No. What does it do?
Do you remember File Buddy?
Yeah.
Favorite, probably. It's always my it's my go-to example when I talk about how much I used to love Mac applications. And it was just this really neat application that would let you do stuff with files. It was really easy to change multiple, you know. The thing that was really cool about File Buddy is it had a really kind of tricked out, nerdy search capability that was way more than the OS could do. Well, that's the first thing that came to mind when you open up Huda Spot, because it basically exposes all of the stuff that you can search on using Spotlight that is not apparent in the one little field in the upper right-hand corner. So you open this up. Let me pull it up here. And there's, this is nerdy. Like, as soon as you open this, Leo, you're going to go, File Buddy, because it's very nerdy. But you can go in there and using all kinds of Boolean stuff, say, I want to find this and such kind of thing in this area, you know, this but not that, and so forth, which is cool. I mean, I think that's great. So, like, there's times when I, you know, straight up Pathfinder search or, you know, kind of string filtering isn't what I want. I know stuff is out there, but, you know, that one little field is pretty vexing. So this is great for that. But what makes it even cooler is, again, like File Buddy, you can then save that search as what they call a template. And the templates they give you are actually pretty cool. You can do a search of, for example, Music Gone Astray, which searches your drive.
That's a template? Music Gone Astray? I love
it. Yeah. So it pulls up any MP3s or AIFs.
It's not in the iTunes folder.
Exactly. You know, it's in some ways, philosophically, I think probably somewhat similar to something like Hazel. But, you know, if there are times when you need to just go and really find a certain kind of file or you're really anal about keeping stuff tidy, this looks like a neat app. I've only been playing with it for a little while, but it looks cool. It's a very strangely priced $24.25. and it's at, I think I'm at the store here. I think it's at
Huda.com. H-O-U-D-A-H.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, if you're a nerd and you miss File Buddy, I think this is great. I'm really interested to see what Apple eventually does with this themselves, because you have to imagine at some point they're going to expose more of that to non-geeks in Spotlight.
Yeah, yeah.
But till then, you got this.
Who in a spot? Who in a thunk it? Andy Yanako, your pick of the week, sir.
I have a pick that I'm sure has been covered before during the immense August history of this podcast, but I'm using it in a totally new way. It is iStop Motion, which has recently been upgraded to iStop Motion 2. This was an app that's designed for doing really fun stop motion video, either using your iSight camera or using basically any source that you have.
I just got it from the Mac Heist thing. I haven't used it
exactly
yet.
Exactly. That's how it came to land on my hard drive as well. I was importing all my pictures from Macworld Expo. And at a trade show or at an event where I'm taking the camera out and I'm having a lot of fun with the camera, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of pictures. And I'm also getting in the habit of just leaving the camera on sequential mode. I just hold down instead of trying to capture that Henri Cartier-Bresson perfect moment. I know something cool is going to happen. I'll just aim the camera in that general direction, hold down the shutter, and then I know that one of these 12 pictures will come out okay. And as usual, I'm importing the pictures in iPhoto, and as usual, iPhoto is showing me what it's importing as things are coming in, and I realized that actually this sequence of images, the sort of subliminal blipvert of everything that I found interesting in that day, rolling in front of my eyes, is actually sort of an interesting sort of thing. So I did it. After everything was imported, I selected everything in iPhoto, didn't export to 640 by 480. After using a couple of different apps that did not work, I had iStop Motion on my hard drive. iStop Motion can also import, in addition to shooting things live with your camera, it can also just import a stack of pictures, and you tell it what do you want the frame rate to be, how big do you want this to be, all this sort of stuff, and imported it into iStop Motion. It spit out a nice QuickTime, and now I have a lovely movie that lasts at 6 frames per second, like 2.5-3 minutes, that collapses my entire Tuesday at the show into one video. And then you can put it into iMovie, do some more edits, add some music and stuff like that. But I've been doing this to a lot of the stuff that I've got on my hard drive, because not only because you have these subliminal flashes of all the people that you met and all the things you thought were interesting, and then there'll be a burst for 2 seconds of sequences of full motion video when you're just hitting things in sequence, but then it'll go back to these blips. Again, it's oddly compelling. I put it up on my YouTube account, and I've been getting a lot of emails from people who are saying, wow, that's so cool, I'm doing that myself. And now, instead of, because people are not willing to sit through a slideshow of 40 of your pictures of your darling baby Trailfaz and their first steps, but if you give them all 600 and they can watch them all in about 30 seconds, they'll stay put for that. They're willing to give you 30 seconds.
Excellent. I stop motion.
I'd say my kids have iStop Motion. I bought it for them, and my son got crazy. I mean, he did probably 2 hours of stop motion with it. total.
Yeah.
And I came back and he did 2.5 minutes, and I was like, how long did that take you to do? Because it was all Google clay and it was very complex and all these little guys running around, and he's like, oh, about 2.5 weeks,
Wow.
But it was easy. It was easy enough for them. I mean, he was doing that when he was 8. So it was easy enough for an 8-year-old to pick up and start to work with. So it's very kind of iAppish that you don't need to read a lot to kind of get it working.
That's very, very really impressive. Great. Yeah. And it's kind of nice to have another use for it. I can't wait to play with it. I can't wait to find the time, I guess, to play with it. iStop Motion. How much? I say we didn't pay for the full freight. I don't think it's very expensive.
That's on the website that you can buy it for $49 and up.
Yeah.
So it's not terribly expensive. Also, if you have kids, this is one of those. I think it's one of those classic apps where if you have it on the hard drive at some point in life, before you take your iMac to the trash, you will find yourself playing with it and using it and enjoying it. Yeah. Like I said, I went through 2 or 3 or 4 different apps, a lot of which cost $200-$400 for editing video and processing pictures, and I was this close to saying, "Okay, Pilgrim, looks like we're putting on the AppleScript gun belt and heading to the Sal Corral once again to write a piece of software that should exist." And then, hey, what do you know, there is a piece of software that exists for turning still images into video. So
very cool. We did an interview in Vancouver last week with some guys that did a new movie, the first stop action feature out of Canada. It's going to be called Edison and Leo. It'll be out later this year, and of course they used a lot of Python and Apple Script workflow stuff, some high-end stuff, But I asked him, what should end users get? And he said, iStopMotion is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, they shot that movie on, get this, a Canon 5D.
Hmm. Wow.
Because the Canon has that app that you can control it with. So the and they actually had a video tap through the eyepiece of the Canon 5D so the animator could see what the Canon's seeing. And it's, believe it or not, the resolution is so high on the Canon 5D, it's essentially a 4K. They have to downsample it to make it a high-def movie. It's so such high resolution. So it's kind of neat. Shot it raw on Canon 5D. My pick is an old, I think we've picked it before, actually, but it's an update, a long-awaited update to Super Duper. The Leopard version is finally here. Hallelujah! 2.5 just came out, and who was it that was friends with the Super Duper folks? Was that you, Scott, or Merlin?
I had dinner with Dave Damian just last week.
Andy, yeah. And so you probably knew this was on its way.
As a matter of fact, I knew that I'd ruined Dave's weekend by spotting out a bug that I'd found in the beta.
Well, you fixed it.
He was like, oh, wow, it's great because we've got all the bugs lit and we can finally release it. And I said, you even fixed the one that I found 2 days ago? Which one? And I mentioned it and was like, no, I didn't know about that.
So you've been using 2.5. It's designed to work with Time Machine, so you can have a bootable backup finally along with your Time Machine volume. What else does it? What else is new in there besides the Leopard compatibility, Time Machine support? Anything else new, or is it just that was the main?
I think it's. I have to say that Super Duper has that distinction of being a piece of software that just sort of works. Yeah. And so I set it up once and then just trust it to work.
About it. Yeah.
Chiefly, they're going for compatibility. Chiefly, they're going for making sure that Super Duper and Time Machine. Makes sense as a two-pronged solution to making sure you never get yourself, shivved in the rib cage because of data loss. It really is the one download answer to the question. Yes, but if I have Time Machine, I don't need anything else, don't I?
Yeah, you do because you want to be able to boot your backup, and that's the whole thing. The hard drive, internal hard drives fail, you can boot your backup.
Your backup with the Super Duper, you're back up and running in a matter of like an hour or so. With Time Machine, it'll restore all of your files, but then you have to, the first time you launch mail, it's going to say, hey, thanks for buying a new thanks for buying a new iMac. Right. Let me explain how mail works to you. I know how mail works.
I don't want that. Super Duper is both free and paid. The free version gets you backups, clones your drive, does it all. If you want to add scheduling, a smart update, sandboxes, scripting, $27.95. It's one of those things where you use the free one and then you go, I'm going to pay for this because it's so good. I want to pay for it anyway.
Right.
Just an excellent product. And Shirt Pocket is done. Shirt-pocket.com. And is it Dave? Thank you, Dave, for updating that.
Dave Nadian, yes.
Working hard. Good man. Yeah. Well worth it. Highly recommend. We've recommended it before, but just wanted everybody to know the Leopard version is out. And we are out of time. Thank you all for being here. I'm going off to buy a 32-gigabyte Touch. Got to have one. Hey, your Mac, your Air's come yet, Scott?
If I know, there'll be no Air's coming to me.
No Air, not that kind of Air's. Your MacBook Air. You didn't order any.
I did not order a MacBook Air.
Get this, I'm talking to Jason Calacanis on Twit on Sunday. He ordered three. He pulled an Alex. He told his assistant, whatever Apple announces, I want three of them. He bought two with a hard drive, and now he just got his solid state, but he was raving about it. Of course, now he's a certain type of user, but he said,
I'm not prepared to rave about something slower than my MacBook.
I know, I agree. I want the speed, but he said it's so light, it's just really a nice feeling to have something that light sitting there.
I will rave when it is appropriate. It's not appropriate, in my opinion, to rave over the air.
Not ready to rave. He is not ready to rave, kids. So put those glow sticks and the E away. We are out of here. Thank you, everybody. Now the back break is broke.